just a opening with a bit of a tangent because it was a topic of interest last week. We had talked about the Machlokas Rishonim, the debate between the Rosh and the Or Zeruah and the Ran, about how to understand Marzutra and Rav Ashi regarding burial on Yom Tov Rishon and Yom Tov Sheni, burial on Yom Tov Rishon by a non-Jew, burial on Yom Tov Sheni by a Jew, in which we had said that one way to take that Machlokas Rishonim is that they are interpreting the Machlokas Marzutra and Rav Ashi as a Machlokas about whether and how we would distinguish between the Derabbanan of Amira La'akum on the first day of Yom Tov and the Derabbanan of directly doing Malacha on Yom Tov Sheni. Whereas one view would say there's no distinction. And both Derabbanans are overridden by Kavod Habrios and the desire to take care of the body. That's one way to look at it. And therefore, either I'll take the view that says that it's mutter on both days, even if the body hasn't waited, or on both days I'm going to say you can only do it if the body has waited. That's across the board, all the rabbanans are the same. Or, alternatively, you could argue that Yom Tov Sheni is lighter than the prohibition of Amira La'akum, that Yom Tov Sheni, maybe we'll say, since it's minhag, is going to be considered less serious than Amira La'akum, which is dealing with a derabbanan of don't tell a non-Jew to do malach on your behalf. So there seemed to have been some surprise at this idea that we can rank derabbanans and distinguish between them. So I brought you on the sheets just a few examples of how within halacha we do distinguish between one derabbanan and another. Not to spend a lot of time going into great depth, but some of it. So sometimes we distinguish, and this is something we've seen elsewhere, based on a biblical connection, meaning how rooted in the De'oraisa is the Derabbanan. The closer to a De'oraisa it is, the more seriously we're going to take it. The further removed, the less so. And to give you a particular example, take a look at the Gemara in Erevin here in Source Aleph. I'm quoting you from across three Amudim in Erevin, so that's why it's a little bit choppy, but you'll see why. We're quoting two sources involving Rabbi Yossi. The first one deals with an Erev Tchumen meal, right? For an Erev Tchumen to enable me to travel more than 2,000 amos outside the town, I have to put out a meal. The meal has to be within my Tchum. And that way, when Shabbos starts, when Yom Tov starts, I view that Eruv as my Shavisa, the place where I am resting for that day, and therefore my 2,000 Amos radius starts from there. That's the idea. But it has to be within 2,000 Amos of where I am when Shabbos starts. Because if not, I have no way to get there. That can't be the place that I'm resting. So what happens if you put the meal down at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, Shabbos is starting at 8 o'clock that evening, and in the interim, between 5 o'clock and 8 o'clock, there was a storm, and the wind blew it, and it blew outside of your tchum. So that when Shabbos started, your place of Shavisa is now beyond you. So he says, Nisgalgel chutz l'tchum. If it, meaning the Sudas Erev Tchumen, as I wrote in, if it rolls chutz l'tchum, or nachal alav gal, or a ruin falls on top of it, right? A building collapses on top of it, so now you have no access to it. O nisra, for it's burned. Or it's truma v'nitmes, it's truma, and then somehow it becomes tamei. Mi ba'od yom, if that happens before Shabbos starts, then eino eruv. It's not a valid eruv meal. It has to be accessible to you. Mishach, which by the way is an important note, not only regarding eruv tchumen, but regarding eruv chatzeros. You have communities which create the eruv chatzeros meal for the community, but then it'll be locked away somewhere. If it's locked away in the rabbi's office, for example, so no one has access to it, potentially, you have a problem. It has to be left in a place where it's accessible. We used to leave it in the coat room of the shul. The theory being, yeah, you know, it's true that at night, at some point, it may not be accessible, but it's accessible when Shabbos starts, and it's accessible for much of the day. Theoretically, it's always accessible. What?
Doesn't have to be in a Rishus
HaRabim? No, it can be in a Rishus HaYachid.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, there is no Rosh HaSarabim when you're doing an Erev Chaseros.
Yeah.
But he says here, if it's before Shabbos that this happens, Eino Eruv. Misha Chashecha, but if it was after dark, then Hareza Eruv. It's still valid. As long as it was in a valid condition when the day started, that's good enough for us. So, of course, they ask, what about if it is Safek? Right? Friday afternoon, it was fine at 5 o'clock. I come back there 10 o'clock that night, and I see it rolled out. But I don't know what time it rolled out. I don't know if that was before Shabbos started or after Shabbos started. So there's a machlokas as to what you do, and Rabbi Yossi, as well as Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Yossi is the key for us, Omrim, Safek Eruv, Kasher. If you're not sure, it's going to be Kasher. Why is it going to be Kasher? Because it's a Derabanan. The law of Eruv Tchumen, we assume, is a Derabanan. Tchum in general is a Derabanan. There's a machlokas, what about whether there's another Tchum of 12 meal that's a Deraisa. But Tchum we assume to be a Derabanan, and therefore we're going to be lenient. So far, so good. But then you see the next case, which comes up on the next Amud. They're dealing with another case of Safek here. Bituma Kala, a case involving low-level Tumah, which I explained in the brackets is Derabanan Tumah. Kigon, Sha'achal Ochlin Tamei and Veshasa Mashkin Tamei, unless say someone ate Tamei food or drank Tamei liquid, which only communicate Tumah to him, Midirabanan. Vahaba Rosho Verubo B'mayim She'uvin, or he entered the bulk of his body into water that was drawn from a receptacle that automatically communicates Tumah Dirabanan. Oshanaflo Roshal Varubo Shlosha Lugin Maim She'uvin, or he takes a shower and three log of Maim She'uvin fall on him. That also creates a Tumah Dirabanan. V'yara Litbo, so after that he went into mikvah. After he contracted Tumah Dirabanan, he went to mikvah. Safek Taval, Safek Lo Taval. And now we're not sure whether he actually immersed or not. He went in. The question is, no, there's some doubt as to whether it was a kosher tevila. He finds he has something on his skin later. He doesn't know if it was on when he was in the mikvah or not. You can develop a Safek case in 100 different ways. Vafilu Taval, or even if he did immerse, let's say, Safek Taval Barabim Sa'a, Safek Lo Taval Barabim Sa'a. We don't know if it was a kosher mikvah or not. Or there were two mikvahs. One has a shear, one doesn't have a shear. The taval be'achas mehen ve'ino yodea be'ezim mehen taval. He dipped in one, we don't know which one. Sveiko tahor. So the rule is, you're in doubt, you assume tahor, because the tumah that you're talking about is a fundamentally a derabanan tumah. But Rabbi Yossi metame. Rabbi Yossi says tame. So now I'm confused. When it came to Tchum Dirabanan, Rabbi Yossi said, Safek is Lakula.
Right.
When it came to Tumah Dirabanan, suddenly he said, Safek is Lachumra. So the Gemara asks, Kasha Rabbi Yossi ad Rabbi Yossi, Sa Amra Huna Barchinna Sha'ani Tumah. He says, Tumah is different. Ha'il V'yeshla Iker Min HaTorah. He says Tumah is different because there is a basis, there's a foundation for Tumah in the Torah. Even if the Tumah that we're talking about now is a Derabanan, Tumah Begadol, in general, is a De'oraisa thing. Even though some of these are real Derabanans having no real connection to a De'oraisa. So for example, if I remember correctly, the reason why there's Tumah for somebody who has three lug of Mayim She'uvin fall on him is because of the practice that people had, that they would go to the shower after going to mikvah, and that would lead people to think that the showering was what did the Tahara. So therefore, they said, if you shower after the mikvah, you know, you're going to make yourself tamei. So that's a pure derabanan. Nonetheless, that has a root in the Torah in the sense that it's built on the structure of tumah. So the Gemara says, well, you know, Shabbos is also a delraisa. Shabbos nami delraisi. Yeah, but k'sah Rabbi Yossi, tchum in derabanan. He says, tchum is a derabanan invention. You're going to say that, Alan? Yeah. So,
how is Tchum and Rabbanan completely Rabbanan? You mean there's no nexus to Tchum to Shabbos?
That's what he's saying. That's what he's saying. Even though we do have a view that I mentioned, that 12 meal existing, this is taking the view
we have the case of, in the Torah, we see that the first Aveira connected to Shabbos.
It's not Tchum, that's carrying.
It's carrying.
Yeah. Carrying and Tchum are considered two different things.
I guess. Yeah. But when you say Tchum is Rabbanan, what would you be over if you were over that Rabbanan? What
it's a Gzera.
It's a Gzera that you'd be over.
Yeah, correct.
So going outside of the Tchum, all the drushes on the Mon, they couldn't go outside.
Yeah,
the
and the camp is a certain number.
And all those drushes are not the right drushes.
It is surprising. I give a Yehoshua shir on Wednesdays, and we had just gone through the instructions that they're given when they cross the Yarden is to stay 2,000 amos from the from the Aron. And everyone asks, does that mean a maximum of 2,000 or a minimum of 2,000? And what's the reason for it? And one of the major approaches, I think even Rashi brings it, is that they're supposed to stay within a 2,000 amos of the Aron, because when they get to Yericho, it's going to be Shabbos, and they're going to need to daven by the Aron, and you have to be within the Tchum of the Aron, which presupposes that they knew from Tchum. But if Yehoshua has Tchum, that's pretty close to being a Deoraisa.
Right. Does that mean there's no Tchum in the Minbar?
That's the implication of saying it's a pure Derabanan. But the but I bring it here not so much to debate Tchum,
no,
as to show that we have this idea of distinguishing between that which is rooted in a Deoraisa and that which is not. A second example, source Beis, those who go to the Avodah Zarah Shir on Shabbos will be familiar with this from when we discussed Kashering. This is a famous Baal HaItur quoted in the Tur. The Baal HaItur is one of the Rishonim. So the Tur here presents us with a source for something that you're probably familiar with. Sorry?
He's from Provence, right?
Probably. That makes sense. Kasav Baal HaItur. The Baal HaItur wrote, Ilo mistafina me Rav Vasa. If I wasn't afraid of my mentors, Hava Amina, I would say, Da'av kli cheres b'kedera d'lav bas yoma, Kevan d'isura d'rabanan mag'ila gimel pa'amim v'dayo. He says, if I wasn't afraid to say this, I would contend that pottery, which hasn't been used in a day, is fundamentally a derabanan, and therefore you can do a triple hagala for it and kasher it, even though it's pottery. Even though with pottery, normally the Torah says there's no such thing as kashering it, he says a triple hagala will work, and this in fact is something that is relied on in cases of need, this position of the Baal HaItur. But but this is discussed, like where does this come from? He's coming out of left field with this idea. And the answer that's given is that it's not just that it's a derabanan, but it's a derabanan again without a deoraisa root to it. This is considered to not have a biblical root. I didn't bring all the sources that go with it. You can't go back to the tape because it's Shabbos here. But nonetheless, we had discussed it at the time. That's one way to distinguish: is it a derabanan that's linked to a deoraisa or not? And if I wanted to argue the point regarding Yom Tov Sheni versus Amir al-Akum, I think you could make the argument that Yom Tov Sheni is rooted in a Deoraisa, because it's a concern for getting the day of Yom Tov wrong. Amir al-Akum is less so, because Amir al-Akum is, don't tell a non-Jew to do something, but there's no Deoraisa. You know,
Malachan Shabbos isn't a Deoraisa.
Malachan Shabbos is a Deoraisa, but... It still seems to be more distant.
But the Amir al-Akum, you see, is somewhat rooted in the Raisa, because the Amir al-Akum is permitted in instance why. Sometimes you could do Amir al-Akum if the Goy is allowed to, if the Goy has the capability of doing something without being over the Raisa.
So
that shows that somehow there is a link to that, because if the only way you can do it is the Raisa, then it shows that there is some connection to the Raisa.
But it's not...
And the way out of Amir al-Akum is, for example, to tell the sheikhs to wash the dishes on Shabbos. So she can wash it with cold water. She doesn't have to wash it with hot water.
To my mind, though, when we say connected to a Deoraisa, that has to mean that there's a concern, like if we didn't make this gezeira, you would come to violate a Deoraisa. Like something like that is what we're talking about.
Whereas Amir al-Akum hasn't...
It's really a thing unto itself. You know, it's sort of, it's linked
to...
So why
then is that the distinction of the klal of Amir al-Akum, as when you could do Amir al-Akum and not do Amir al-Akum? One of those distinctions is whether the goy could or is forced to do a deraiser.
Because the understanding is that derabanans were not created to... It's like zera l'xera. Derabanans were not created to then have a gezera attached to them.
It would only be a deraiser. So then you see... Xerabanan is because it's connected to a derisa.
Right. Although we still require that it be a mitzvah case, but...
But you're trying to say that there is a fundamental difference between Amir al-Akum and Yom Tov Sheni.
Yes. Well, there certainly is. I mean, otherwise these Rishonim couldn't make the distinctions they make. The question is, like, what is the distinction? But sometimes the distinction between one derabanan and another is simply based on logic. Take a look at number three, please. This is a Trumas Hadeshen. The Trumas Hadeshen is talking about where you have a knife stabbed into a hole and you want to take the knife out on Shabbos. And the concern is that you are creating an opening, because when you pull the knife out, it's going to scrape a little bit away from the walls of the hole where it's been embedded. And you're going to make a hole.
Which is a derisa.
Theoretically, as we're going to see. Theoretically. Watch what happens.
Is the derisa, what's the purpose of the hole?
Well, it's mitake. In other words, if you are making a hole that's used the hachas of a hotzi, but that's exactly where he's going with this, in Source Gimel. The Trumas Hadeshin writes, the im tomar, if you'll say that someone should not be allowed to pull out the knife, demechayev mishum demetake in pischa, he's liable for fixing a hole, fixing an entryway. Hamaskinan Hassan Perik Chavis, he says, the Gemara in Shabbos concludes in its discussion, Devar Torah means De'oraisa, Midi Oraisa, Decho Pesach She'eno Asoy Lahaknis Lahotzi, Lo Shmei Pischahu. If a hole that you make is not meant to be used to transport items from one side to the other, it's not called an entryway as far as Shabbos is concerned, not on a De'oraisa level. Ella the Chachamim gazru b'chof sachem unakavim, but the Chachamim made a decree for all holes that will be made that they should be aser. It's drabanan. Gizera mishum lulin de tarnagolim. The inu asuyim lahachnes olahotzi kdi isa hasam. It's a decree because of the possibility that you're going to make a hole in a chicken coop, which will be used to put things in. I imagine chickens, or take things out. Olahachi kamachavim lahosif aser. And therefore, if you intend to add it to the hole, if you intend to widen the hole, it will be usur. Aval, however, and this is the key point, b'she'ein miskavein, if he does not intend to widen the hole, nuchalomar, we could then say, afilu ipsig reishehu, even if it's a guaranteed result that it's going to scrape away, if it's not your intent, shari, it will be permitted. Normally we say psik reishe is usur. If it's a guaranteed result, it's usur. However, de beisur de rabbanan yesh lachalik bein miskavin gomer lipsik reishe. When you're dealing with a de rabbanan, he says, I'm willing to distinguish between where you intended it and where you did not intend it, even though it was a guaranteed result. So the upshot of this is that a de rabbanan is going to be mutter if I didn't intend to do it, even if it was a guaranteed result of my actions. That's what the Trumas Hadeshin is saying. Trumas Hadeshin is a very serious halachic authority.
So any psik reisha de rabbanan would be okay.
So far, that's what it sounds like. We're gonna disagree with that by the time we're done. Yes, lo nichale or lo ichmasle, right? As opposed to where it's something like he's happy about, in which case then we make that like miskave, we make that like it's intentional.
Isn't that literally Tosfos' concept if the time of the gzera does not exist? The gzera does not exist
because
the time of the gzera is that you might make a hole, and because you're yanking it out with absolutely no intent, the whole time of the gzera does not exist.
Good. So you are reading the mind of Rabbi Yosef Shaul Nathanson. So wait a little bit, and you will see that in here. But yes, that's exactly where we're going with it. Take a look at Source Dalet, which gives us a psik reishe on a derabanan and says it's usur. They're talking here about a beehive. You have bees in a beehive, and you want to protect the hive by spreading a mat over it. It's starting to rain, or you know, whatever. So you want to protect the hive where you're raising the bees. The problem is that by covering the hive, you're also trapping the bees inside. So he says, "Porsin machatzelas lagabe hakaveres." You're allowed to spread a mat over a hive. I added in brackets lahagen alav to protect it. Ubilvad shloyechavei latsud, as long as you don't intend to trap. But also we require that it not be a guaranteed result, that you're putting them out on it is guaranteed to trap them. So it won't be a psik reishe. In other words, if it was a psik reishe, if it was guaranteed that by putting the mat on the hive, I would be trapping the bees inside, then we would say you're not allowed to do this, even though it's a derabanan. It's called a derabanan because bees are not a normally trapped creature. Normally trapped creatures are things like deer. You trap deer. No one traps bees. We kill bees or we raise them for honey. We don't trap them.
If they bother you, you temporarily trap them.
But even that is not what people normally do. Normally, if people are being bothered by a bee, they don't trap it. It's just Jews and Yontif.
That's right.
So what the problem that we're raising here is, the Trumas Hadeshin says that I'm allowed to do a derabanan unintentionally.
What's the derabanan issue?
Here, in our case, in the bee case, yeah. Trapping.
That's the derisa.
No, because bees are not normally trapped. Yeah. It's not a species that people normally trap.
The
so therefore, it's a derisa.
Like the act is derisa, but
I am trapped into a derisa.
Right, we're not dealing with connected to a derisa. Both of these are connected to a derisa. Making a hole larger is also connected to a derisa.
You're not allowed to go. You can't trap an insect. You can. Under a cup.
So, no, what there is in the event that you are afraid of being hurt, like in the case of a bee,
yes.
And where you don't have other options available to you, so you'd be allowed to do, some will permit, I think even the Shemir Shabbos Kehilchos permits, a temporary trapping, and then you'll let him go.
Some people even go further. And
so you trap
him like after lunch. Like
after lunch. Yeah.
And some people,
really?
Yeah. I believe that some people have reactions and you don't know who's going to have it.
Then you may be dealing with Kushrat Nefesh.
Right, for sure. But you don't know who has it, so that's the problem. Some people might react.
I think a Sahu Kushrat Nefesh is enough to get you out.
Assuming you have some reason to think there's real danger.
Because you're worried about
So
I think you have to go that far, like the rabbi said. I think Shemir Shabbos Kelav Chosei says exactly
right. I think he does.
Because your intent is to let it go.
Well, I'm saying more. I'm saying that you're allowed to kill it right away because.
Kill it.
Because you don't know. You might have one reaction.
It's easier to trap.
I'm not going there because we're at the wrong part of the calendar to be up on this list.
And there's no more bees anyways in the world anyways.
Right. All right. They've been getting rid of them.
What about Muxa?
In terms of
the knife, for example.
The knife's not a Muxa knife. It's a knife you're going to use.
But you obviously had no intent to use it before Shabbos. You would have taken it out of that hole to begin with.
Why? It's been stored there.
Come on, you have to have specific intention every knife in your drawer. So if you had a knife underneath the couch...
Well, no. What Alan's pointing out is correct, that if I had a knife that was put in a place where I keep things that I don't plan to use...
Like a
chalif. Last week we had talked about the peros and the muktza, right? The produce that's stuck in a space where you're not planning on using them. That's a different story, but that's not the idea here is that you didn't have these neat little knife sets that you could, pick up for $20. This was, there was no holder, so you stabbed it into the wall. It may not be hygienic, that's another story. But the point here is that the Trumas Hadashin tells me that a psik reishe on a derabanan is mutter. Right? As long as it wasn't my intent, even if it's a guaranteed result. But regarding the beehive, you're telling me a psik reishe and derabanan is oster. If it's guaranteed to trap them, I'm not allowed to cover the hive. So how do I understand this? So source Hay, the Tshuva Shaul Umeshiv, that's Rav Yosef Shaul Nathanson, gives the following answer. He says, "Bimalacha shegazru mishum didami limalacha de'oraisa." When you have a malacha for which the decree is that it's like what you're going to do, the derabana that you're going to do, it resembles a de'oraisa. Vagzeirahu de'imnatir osam. Natir malacha de'oraisa, and the Rabbanan came along and made decreed because they said, if we would permit this action, people will come to permit a biblically prohibited action as well. In Cain, ein kavanasa l'malacha de'oraisa klal. Well, in this case, he has no intent to do it. So therefore, he certainly doesn't have intent to do the de'oraisa. The whole thing is happening by accident. So why should I have any concern whatsoever that someone's going to perform a malacha de'oraisa? So therefore, I don't care if it's a guaranteed result. Ultimately, I'm not going to think, because I was allowed to do this, therefore I'm allowed to do this. Because I didn't even think I was allowed to do this. It just happened. Right? In other words, the case of pulling the knife out of the wall, I didn't think I was allowed to scrape away. I wasn't even thinking about scraping anything away. That wasn't my intent. So therefore, I'm not going to come to scrape away and widen a hole that's used lahachnis alahotzi.
So it's like the whole basis comes down to, is it marzayin or not?
Why marzayin?
No, actually, marzayin seems to be excluded.
This isn't marzayin.
It's like wouldn't allow me.
That's what I'm saying.
Correct.
If the reason the Rabbanan prohibited it was effectively marzayin, because if someone sees you do it, they may think you...
Well, it's not really marzayin. It's my own misunderstanding. I'm the one doing the action.
The person doing the action, what is
intent? No, but what it's saying is, the ones you could do are the ones that were only prohibited from a marasayin perspective to start with.
Again, I don't want to use the word marasayin, because marasayin has a connotation of an onlooker who doesn't realize what's going on. The issue is me. If I were to go to the rabbi and say to the rabbi, "Rabbi, I put my knife in the wall before Shabbos, because that's what I always do. And then it just occurred to me, I've been learning about, pulling holes and things and widening holes. When I pull this knife out, it's going to widen the hole. Is that a problem, Rabbi?" If the rabbi says to me, it's no problem, it's mutter, I'm not going to realize that this hole it's mutter for, because this is not a hole in which I through which I transport things, but that hole is a problem. I won't understand it personally. That's what he's talking about. It's not a marzain about the onlooker. And so what he's saying is, if it's a case like that, where the only reason to prohibit it is because people won't understand the nuances of where it's mutter, where it's usser, if they didn't even know they were doing it in the first place, it's not going to bother me.
So
now,
how would we phrase that?
Now why am I not worried about my resign? Well,
so I'm not going to... Yeah. So any time that the Rabbanan was a gezeira, that if they let me do something, I may think I can do something essentially the same that would be usser midaraisa. If it's that type of gezeira that caused the Rabbanan, then I can be makula.
Well, I can't be makula, but if I didn't even know I was doing it in the first place...
Or if it's no benefit to me and I'm not doing it for the reason that...
It's not what I'm trying to do.
That's the root.
Yes.
That distinguishes all these from the other.
Yes. That's correct. So that's his idea. So he says that's relevant in the cases that they're describing here, because in the case of the hole, you don't know that you're widening the hole, and the only concern with widening this hole is because of widening some other hole. Therefore it's mutter. Whereas, he says, when it comes to the case of the beehive, it's not, they're prohibiting covering the hive here, lest you cover the hive, cover, you know, trap, you know, a deer. That wasn't it. It was gezeira in its own right. We don't want people trapping bees. And therefore, your intent is irrelevant. Your intent doesn't matter, because it's not about lest you do something else. It's a thing unto itself. Don't trap bees on Shabbos. That's the idea. There's more to be said on that front, but I just wanted to show this, again, a distinction between one type of derabbanan and another. The third and last one that I want to bring, which is relevant for the Amir al-Hakum discussion, comes from a sefer called the Mincha Shabbos. The Mincha Shabbos, for some reason, no, it's not him. I thought I was going to say it's the Grach Noe, but it's not. I don't remember another name of who it is. But it's a commentary on the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, on the laws of Shabbos. So take a look at the Kitzur here in Source Vav. He's talking about somebody who is ill, but not life-threateningly ill. Chola she'en bo sakana. And he says, umutter, it is permitted for this chola she'en bo sakana, le'chol velishtos samei refua. He's allowed to eat and drink medicine on Shabbos. He can perform whatever therapy is needed himself via others. Assuming it doesn't involve a deoraisa or a derabanan. In other words, if the only prohibition involved is the prohibition against medicine, but no other one, if he is at the stage of chola she'en bo sakana, which means he's already ill enough that he's like confined to bed, he's just not in dangerous condition, then we waive the isser of refua, the isser of the medicine, and he can do this. Aval, however, kol sheyesh po afilu isser derabanan, if there is a prohibition involved, even just a rabbinic one, asur laso, so he's not allowed to do it, ki im al yidei eino yehudi, unless he has a non-Jew do it. Amir l'akum, in other words. V'im ein eino Yehudi, what if there is no non-Jew available? Yesh lahatir lasos al yidei Yisrael iser derabanan al yidei shinui. Then you could have a Jew do it in an unusual way. So the Mincha Shabbos commenting on this, in Tzadi Aleph Mem Gimel of the Mincha Shabbos, he says, that's interesting. There's a machlokes as to if I have to choose between Amir la'akum or malacha done by a Jew with a shinui, which is better? Hmm. And he says, what does it seem from source above, from what the Kitzur says here? Amir la'akum, correct. Better Amir la'akum. If you don't have the Amir la'akum option, then let a Jew do it with a shinui. So bringing it back to our piece, we see that Amir la'akum is a lighter form of derabanan than, say, malacha done by a Jew with a shinui. So we can make these distinctions between one type of derabanan and another. That doesn't address directly the question of, well, what about where it's Yom Tov Sheni versus Amir Lahakum, but that you see from the discussion that we have here. And the way that Rishonim are willing to look at the, if I remember correctly, they're willing to look at Yom Tov Sheni as lighter than Amir Lahakum. Was that it, or was it the other way around?
Depends who you hold it, like.
Depends upon
who, right?
No, I think they were consistent. It was, I mean, one of them said they're equal, right. But then the other two agreed. Here, I have the chart right here. The Rush's version of it was that they said that they're the same. The Or Zeruah's understanding was that Yom Tov Sheni was lighter than Yom Tov Rishon, and the Ran's understanding was that Yom Tov Sheni... No, I'm sorry, that's right. Right, Or Zeruah's understanding was that Yom Tov Sheni is lighter than Yom Tov Rishon because Rav Ashi will allow it for Yom Tov Sheni, he won't allow it for Yom Tov Rishon. Right. Whereas the Ran will say also, the Ran will say that we're more makil, no, the Ran will say that we're more makil for Yom Tov Rishon with Amir Lakum than we are for Yom Tov Sheni. Correct. So you have different views taken. Right. Okay.
How do you look forward with a Shunai?
Well, no one expected to do Kfura with a Shinoi.
Well, how come it doesn't come up?
How come it doesn't come up? Because probably you can't.
Okay. Is it the Raisa to dig a hole? Is it not a Raisa or is there only a Rabbana?
It's a Raisa because you're digging a hole in order to use it for storage.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, you're Maman B'Tchiyas HaMeisim, and therefore you assume he won't be in there for 24 hours?
Right.
Maybe. That's Rabbi Kiva Eger's line, right? About the Kfura for the fellow who wouldn't give staka. I'll remember it at the end of the story at the end. Okay. In any case,
I mean, Howard was last week asking me a question. Covered of brios, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Covered of mace, right? According to some opinion, it is part of covered of brios.
Right. I didn't get into it at all, but yeah.
So nobody talks about that. It's still a derisive. Let's say according to some opinions. Covered habrios is a derisa.
I mean, the Gemara is explicit. Covered habrios overrides Yisurei Derabanan.
Right.
And we use that, lahalacha.
But they don't use that at any time in terms of Yom Tov Sheni or anything.
But they
like
do.
That.
That's why they justify it. That's the basis for justifying what we're doing here.
Right.
That's why you can have the Jew do it on Yom Tov Sheni. Right. That's why the Akum can do it on Yom Tov Rishon. Is covered. That's exactly why.
But not he couldn't do it on Yom Tov Rishon, the Jew, right?
The Jew can't do it in the Rishon because then you're writing a derisa. That's a derisa. Covered abrius only.
If you're possible, do you have to worry about shinui or not shinui too if you can do it on the Rishon? I'm not talking about kufura. I'm talking about other things. Let's say tearing toilet paper.
Right.
You could tear it out the shinui. Let's say not tearing it.
Yeah, they say don't tear it on perforation.
Well, that's
a different issue, right? Because if you tear it on perforations, it's derisa.
You might be able to put it down. And use your elbows to tear. I don't know if that's a shinoi or if that's enough of a shinoi. I don't know.
Right, so part of the problem is in defining what a shinoi is. Because when we talk about a shinoi, it isn't sufficient that you do something in a way that's different from the way you normally do it. It also has to be that you do it in a way that's somehow less efficient, and the finished product demonstrates that it's less efficient. So, for example, the classic shinoi is writing with your left hand if you're a righty, not just because you're not used to writing with your left hand, but because the product is inferior. So someone says, well, I want to turn on the light with a shinoi, so I'm going to hit it with my elbow. There's absolutely no difference in the finished product as far as whether you did it with your elbow or whether you did it with your finger. So that doesn't necessarily qualify as a shinoi. So that's why when you ask the question about burial with a shinui, like, I don't know how one does burial with a shinui. Has the grave been look any different? Shinui requires real examination. It's not clear cut. That's for sure. So that's something that still requires some analysis. Okay. Moving ahead in the Gemara, because we have to see some at least.
No, it's
okay.
Okay?
Keep on moving.
Okay. We are on Vav Amud Aleph. And we are now done with the eggs. Did we do the last piece before the eggs? Did we do Rabina Haba Yosef? No, you know what? We didn't. Okay. So this is the last piece then on this Gemara still. Ravina Haba Yosef Kameh de either Rav Asi or Rav Ashi. Logically, it should be Rav Ashi, just generationally. Ravina and Rav Ashi are together. They're the canonizers of the Gemara. So Ravina is sitting in front of Rav Ashi. B'shnei yamim tovim shal Rosh Hashanah. It's Rosh Hashanah. Chazyei d'haba atziv. And he sees that Rav Ashi is upset about something. Amar le amai atziv mar. He says, why is the master upset? Amar le, de lo osivi eruvei tavshilin. I didn't do an Erev Tavshilin. I didn't make an Erev Tavshilin, and now I'm going to be in trouble. So Amar Le Velosiv Marha Idna. So he said, so what? Do it today. The assumption is, as Rashi explains, that we're talking about the first day of Yom Tov right now, and it's Thursday, and therefore he can do what the Gemara is going to call a conditional Erev Tavshilin. You say, look, either today is Yom Tov, in which case tomorrow is Chol, and I can cook on Friday for Shabbos. Or, today is really Chol, and tomorrow is Yom Tov, in which case my Erev Tavshilin is valid.
We're talking about Rosh Hashanah here.
Correct. Yes. So that's where we're going.
Yeah.
You're one step ahead all day today. That's what happens when you host. The magic of hosting. So he says, why not do a conditional Erev Tavshilin? Milo Amar Rava Meniach Adam Erubei Tavshilin Miyom Tov L'Chaveru Umasna. Doesn't Rava in fact say you can do that? You can set up the Erev Tavshilin on the first day of Yom Tov on behalf of Friday, the second day of Yom Tov, and just make a condition. So Amar Lei, to which he replied, Amar Da Amar Rava B'Shnei Yomim Tov M'Shlagolios. Sure, Rava said that if you're dealing with a regular double Yom Tov, like, say, Shavuos, B'Shnei Yomim Tov M'Shlag Rosh Hashanah Mi'Amar. But does he say that regarding the double Yom Tov of Rosh Hashanah? No. To which he says, V'ha'amri neherdoi av beitza muteres. But wait a minute. We saw, way back when, the neherdoi said that an egg laid on the first day of Rosh Hashanah is mutar on the second day of Rosh Hashanah. So he says, yeah, that's the neherdoi. Amar le, Rav Mordechai, beferish amar li, mar delo savar la'ad de neherdoi. So Rav Mordechai, who Rashi explains is a student of Rav Ashi, he tells Ravina that Rav Ashi told him explicitly that he disagrees with the neherdoi. So therefore, the Ner Doi don't figure into this.
Regarding getting back to burial for a second.
Yeah.
Okay. On 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, are you allowed to do the burial on the second day of Rosh Hashanah?
So if you go back to the top of the page, the third line. It's already been a few weeks since we saw the top of the page, but he says Va'afilu b'shnei yamim tov m'sha Rosh Hashanah, it will be allowed. Even though we talk about viewing it as one day, one long day, and so on, since you're dealing with Kavod HaMeis, we're willing to view it as the Derabanan and leave it at that.
But then should the Bivai have been read Akum only and not through the Jew doing it on the second day?
He's saying no. He's saying we're willing to look at it as a, yeah, for the sake of Kavod of the Meis. Yeah. Okay, so that they only brought this piece about the Erev Tavshilin here because it concludes the discussion about the second day of Rosh Hashanah. That concludes that. We are now done with eggs. But having finished with eggs, now we start with what comes out of the egg, right? Now we have to deal with the chick, with the Efroach. So Itmar, Efroach shenolad b'Yom Tov. If a chick is laid on, is hatched, I should say, on Yom Tov. We have the egg that was laid on Yom Tov, now we have the chick that comes out of the egg. So Rav Amar Asur, Ushmuel v'Temer b'Yochanan Amar Mutar. Rav says, Aser, Shmuel / Rav Yochanan says, Mutar. What's this about? Rav Amar Aser Muktzahu. Rav says, the chick that was inside the egg was Muktzah when Yom Tov started. It was sitting inside the egg, and therefore remains Muktzah even when it emerges from the egg.
We're just talking about first day Yom Tov. We're not differentiating between second and first day.
So it would appear, correct. The same day. Just like when we started the Masechta, we're talking about the egg.
Right.
Ushmuel v'Temer b'Yochanan Amar Mutar. Why? This is a very odd phrase. Ho'il umatir atzmo b'shchita. It permits itself with shchita. I don't know what in the world he's talking about. It permits itself for shchita with shchita. How?
What do you mean?
I don't know what the words mean.
Marshall.
What does that mean? It permits itself for, with shchita.
If you shechting, you're allowed to do, presumably,
yes.
On this chicken.
Well, Tosfos will note here that it has to be a chicken that shows signs of being fully developed, so that I don't worry that it's not fully formed.
If you shechted the chicken sometime before, since you could have shechted the chicken as soon as Yom Tov came in, and if you would have done that, what would be the category of the of what was inside the chicken? The mutter or aser for you?
It was in the egg.
No, it was mutter.
It was in the egg.
What would it be? What would the item be?
No. The egg wasn't inside the chicken.
Oh, well, it can't be.
The egg was laid before Yom Tov.
It's not a mammal.
When Yom Tov started, it was an egg.
Oh, the egg.
It's a mammal. It's not a mammal.
No.
Oh, the egg was laid.
Right.
The egg was laid yesterday.
It's outside. Oh, it's out that month.
It's been incubated.
On it, and then it's being incubated. I'm sorry. Right. So I don't
have a cow.
Having
a cow.
So,
right,
no, these words are hard.
Hard to understand.
This is not straightforward. Take a look at Rashi. Rashi, Ha'olu Matir Atzmo, it's the fourth of the medium lines in Rashi. Ha'olu Matir Atzmo, Bilei Daso, Le'yos Nishchad. When it is born, when it comes out of the egg, it permits itself to be shechted. Mashaloha Yalifnei Le'yos Daso, which when it was inside the egg, you couldn't do shechita. Right? It's hard to do shechita on a chick that's still inside the egg. That would be quite a trick. So it can only happen once it comes out of the egg. So af muktza, so to its muktza status, hitiras atzmo bilei daso. When it came out of the egg, not only did it permit itself for shechita, it also permitted itself from muktza. Demigo da askin laha, since it is mitzukan, it is fixed as far as shechita is concerned. It's fixed as far as Moksha is concerned. Okay. If that made sense to you, you are a far greater Talmud Chacham than I've ever met.
Doesn't make any sense. What does that mean? Because the whole concept of Moksha is, what was it, Banish Marshes, and so it's not, what happens later should be irrelevant. It doesn't make sense.
So then Yeshua tries to explain this for us, because you read Rashi, and I don't know what it means. And then Yeshua writes, in Surah Zion on your sheets, he says, Pirush Rashi, he quotes Rashi, Ha'olu matir lios nishcha b'lei daso, mashlo haya lifnei lei daso, av muktza hitir b'chulei demiko daskin laha ad kan l'shono. We're at the end of the top line here. He says, Milsa da'akshoi ba'kama idanin. He says, I have been thinking about this thing for ages, and I don't know what to do with it. Demanesinas tam huzeh. What explanation is Rashi giving? Adarabba, just the opposite. Iker inyan muktza hu. Kevan shaloha yaroi me esmo, ze gori moiser. Umamigo huze. He says, what does muktza mean? It wasn't suitable for use yesterday. That's what makes it usher today, right? When Yom Tov started, it wasn't suitable. So what's this migo of? Well, now it's eligible for shechita, therefore it's not muktza? What does that mean?
When you say it's not eligible, they used to put beds, they used to use eggs as supports for certain things. So it wasn't eligible for that use, but it wasn't muktza. I could have used the egg to support a bed. Make a bed left.
Right, but it's not food.
It's the chick.
First of all, it's the chick. But second of all, it's not food.
It means the no.
And they weren't using it for beds. We already established. They weren't using it for beds. They were using it for the bowl.
Okay, but whatever repurpose, is that egg muktzah? For that purpose, it had another use. So maybe, why don't you understand Rashi that way?
Because the chick is what we're talking about.
What purpose would you have other than the chick?
You could have eaten the egg.
No, the
egg was born a week ago.
The egg that's there, Erev, when Yontif comes in, Bein HaShemashes, that egg is being sat on by a hen and it's being incubated, correct? Is that the status Erev Yontif of that egg?
That's what we assume.
That's what we assume. And later, a chick comes out.
Yeah.
So I'm asking, Bein HaShemashes, is that egg mukser or not? Can I touch that egg?
Assuming this egg is usable, you're right, that it's not mukser because you can use it to support a bowl. Does it mean that the chick that's inside it is not mukser? And certainly muktzah for eating.
Can you shech the calf that comes out on Shabbos? Yeah.
On Yom Tov? Yeah. So if the mother had been intended for shechita, then yes.
Yeah.
I mean, we talked about in the beginning of the Masechta, we talked about that in terms of egg that came from a mother that was intended for shechting.
So come to Shai's point. If you would set aside the egg to eat it, and a chick came out,
because it was no longer part of the mother.
What if the guy's thought is he wants to eat the chick? It hasn't existed yet, but if he thinks before Yontif that he wants to eat the chick when it hatches. So could that be what Rashi's talking about, that the coming out of the egg is what is the migo here? Like, what's the thought of the person on Erev Yontif?
So Rashi isn't even concerned with that. Rashi is inventing something brand new.
Right.
Rashi is telling you that this chick goes through two experiences in terms of Jewish law. Number one, it becomes shechtable, and because it becomes shechtable, it becomes no longer mukta.
So, but if the person's thought beforehand is he wanted to shech something that didn't exist yet. Okay, he wanted to shech the egg that the
it wasn't accessible. Yeah,
that was not accessible. So then, Rashi makes sense in the sense that what he envisioned before Yom Tov happened, and therefore it becoming a chick allowed it to become Shechtit, which was no longer Muksa because that was his original thought, retroactively.
So he was planning that it would come out of the egg.
He was, yes.
And therefore he didn't consider it Muksa.
Then therefore banish mushes, it's not Muksa.
Well, I'm going to go with what the Yeshua says, but we're not going to end up seeing it tonight. We're not going to get through this. So the I'm going to hold off with the Pnei Yeshua. I thought they asked me for this program for next Thursday night. They had asked me, you know, what we're going to be up to, so they can, you know, put a title on it. Although I didn't see them publicizing titles anyway, they asked me. I told them like something further along.
So we do our regular.